Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Hey, welcome to Court Radio. I am Dean Weitzman, and I am joined in the studio. He wasn't here last week, folks, but he's back from wherever he was swashbuckling up in upstate New York. It's my co-host, David M. Rappaport.
Good morning.
Wow.
Yeah, we got some...
This is new.
Explosive.
I mean, it's the same music, but there's effects in there.
He beefed it, yeah.
Wow.
He juiced it up.
That's a dynamic.
Rappaport, guess what?
What?
You weren't here last week. No. We are now utilizing 215-227-2727. Uh-huh. Folks, if you've got legal questions, David and I have the answer, and we'll give it to you as long as you give us a call and ask your question. At 215-227-2727. That's right. That'll get you into the studio.
One number.
And during the week, it'll get you into my office. It's the same number all the time. It's Dean's number. Just give it a call. 215-227-2727. Hmm. There's a story behind that number.
I was just going to ask you, how did you get that? I know the story, but you know. As any good co-host would do, I'd say, how did you get that number? I'm wondering.
I'm not going to tell you right now.
Oh, okay.
But, that's a story for another day. It's an interesting story.
It is.
And one that our listeners would love to hear, but they're going to have to ask repeatedly. 215-227-2727. So we got some things going on. The government shut down, David.
While
you were gone.
That's it. Everything's gone.
It is. I have a client who has a business, a civilian business down at 30th Street Station where the government has the, I guess it's the post office.
Yeah.
And his business is shut down. He's losing like $1,500, $2,000 a day gross.
I'm not going to be overly political, but let's be political. It's the Republicans. I mean, last time I heard, again, not to politicize it, but it is a political issue now. It's a law. The Affordable Health Care Act became law. It's a law. So abide by the law. Instead, they're trying to change it, and they're taking us hostage by using this as a way. It's ridiculous.
It's those Tea Party people. And you know, I was looking at how Tea Party people get elected. They have to gerrymander. So that's the act of kind of pulling together a voting district.
Yeah.
And you pick and choose, and it doesn't have to be contiguous. It doesn't have to be like one big lump.
Right.
So
these
districts are ridiculous.
Well, here's what happened in a nutshell. All the moderates that were in, you know, the people in Congress who could work deals and were kind of on both sides of the fence, they're gone. Because these Tea Partiers did what you said, gerrymandering, they redistrict. Now, their only purpose, I mean, really, their sole purpose was to get rid of Obamacare. That was their platform when they ran, and that's what they're doing. They're trying to do. The fact is, though, that it's law, and it shouldn't be an issue right now.
Yeah, well.
It's crazy. It's just, they were arguing about a law that wasn't even in effect, talking about how bad it was. Now that it's in effect, people are recognizing how good it could be. It's a little confusing, obviously, but it's still, one has nothing to do with the other, and now we're shut down. It's crazy.
Yeah. And a lot of people are being hurt by it. That's the bottom line.
I know.
A lot of people are being hurt by it. But on the other hand, while a lot of people are being hurt, it doesn't seem like people are angry about anything.
I know.
You know, people are just sort of like taking it in stride. Like, the government's shut down. Who gives a crap?
I don't know why.
It's meaningless in their lives.
It won't. If it continues, it won't become. It won't be meaningless forever. You know, it's meaningless because hopefully they're a little. They have some money, but people who are at the bottom of the barrel are affected first, and then it trickles up. And that'll happen if it stays for a while.
Will the senior citizens, the ARP crowd, will they be getting their checks soon?
I think that's not affected yet.
You don't?
But
okay.
I don't think it is. Certain things are maintained, like benefits to seniors and Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. But, you know, the longer it's shut down.
How about our veterans who have come back from fighting our wars?
I would suspect that in some way they're getting affected negatively because they always do. It's just, I don't know. There's a disconnect. And people seem to think, you know, it's everyone's fault. Oh, it's the government, it's the politicians. But guess what? I firmly believe that the administration shouldn't give in.
Yeah, I think it's going to...
They need to stand on this because...
I think it's going to bounce back and it'll be reflected in the ballot box against the Republicans this coming November. That's my guess, is that this is the kind of a thing that will have a negative effect and wash away some of the really extremists in Congress.
It is the extremist. However, I'm so sick of the main party, like the Mitch McConnell and what is that guy, Cantor, and all the, who stand up there and talk about how it's the fringe of their party that are causing all these problems, yet they don't do anything and they support those policies. You know, it's all of them.
Yeah.
They all need to go. There's Mitch McConnell. He's the one. I will say that name over and over again. Can't stand that man. He's horrible.
You know, we got the dumbest criminal again.
Yes, we do. I saw that story.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it, but a drug dealer accidentally texted a New Jersey State Police officer. Yeah. He said, hey.
I love when that happens.
Your dope's ready, man.
Let's meet. Where do you want to meet?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had a quarter pound of marijuana for sale and wanted to meet at a pizza parlor. Hey, come on down to the pizza parlor. I got some good weed for you,
yeah,
dude.
You know, if it were, I'd feel a little more strong about this if it were heroin or cocaine or something like
well,
that.
Well, now you're going back to your days of
marijuana. Yeah. I mean, come on already. Haven't we gone through this already?
Going to Temple, a little glassy-eyed.
Who told you that?
I saw your picture up around campus. You know, if you see this man run. So we have Nicholas DeLeer Jr. Of Sussex County, New Jersey. He met with an undercover agent. We won't reveal the agent's identity because it's against the law. But he met with him, and they got a warrant. They had a little doggy there that detects drugs, and bada bing, bada boom. Old Nick is in.
Nick needs a lawyer.
Is incarcerated again. Right. Again. Poor Nick.
Wow. I don't know. My earphones are very sensitive today.
No, the sound is like 3D.
It's
digital. You know, we're now a digital sound station. You know, it reaches right across the airwaves.
Well, get ready to do that sound again, because I think we have to mention the other story: the Philadelphia assistant district attorney, not the actual district attorney.
No, Seth.
Seth is a good guy.
He's clean.
But this is one of his employees who, slipped through the cracks, I assume.
Well, you know what it is? I read the story in its entirety.
Yeah.
It's a woman, and that's really what it is. She's not an assistant DA here. She's a woman.
Oh, jeez.
No.
What does that mean?
Well,
woo. People start calling in now. I will defend. Oh, I love.
Let me get the eraser out.
I am now the new host of Court Radio. Dean is on hiatus for a...
Right.
Now, go ahead. Explain yourself.
She's a woman in a relationship, and it could be a man in a relationship. In other words, she allowed her mental state to become deteriorated over strong feelings for somebody else.
Right. But she's also an assistant district attorney. You said, oh, she's a woman, not a district attorney.
You know what?
Is.
She wasn't thinking like a lawyer at the time, and she wasn't thinking like a DA at the time, or an ADA.
Are you defending her now?
I am defending her.
Oh, please.
Look, she has to suffer the consequences of her acts. I'm not saying she should be excused for it, but, you know, anybody can get caught up in the moment, and that's what she did.
Yeah, but she went further than got caught. First of all, let's tell everyone what she did. She used her office, the district attorney's office, her influence there. She filed a false report against her ex-boyfriend, a false police report.
No.
Or something, right?
She reported a vehicle stole. She took a stolen vehicle off of the stolen vehicle list for a year so that her boyfriend could use it. And it really belonged to some third party, the ex-girlfriend of the boyfriend. This is really getting complicated, but...
It says she filed a false police report to exact revenge.
Yeah. Well, then she re-reported the vehicle as stolen.
And he had it.
And he had it.
Right.
You know, and he had had it for a year. And then she called the police and said, I think you'll find this stolen vehicle, and gave his address. Wow. I mean, it was a convoluted, crazy little deal. But
I think if she were prosecuting a person who did that, she'd be arguing that they all sorts of intent there. I mean, not like she was out of her mind.
No,
she was just scheming and plotting and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Guess what, Dean? Your client? Guilty. Click. Can I have the sound effect, please? Thank you.
All right. I guess I'm going to have to agree with that. All right. Let's talk to Tanisha from East Oak Lane. Hi, Tanisha.
Hello.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. What was your question?
Okay, not too long ago, my friends and I were coming back from a bus trip, and we were told by the tow truck guys that we can park in the parking lot because they were sitting there. And when we come back, they tow everyone's car except for mine and someone else's. I run over there. He was still trying to hook the things up to the wheel. I get in my car. And I had just kept the door open and kept my leg on the ground and just, like, sat there. He runs over, and I didn't think he was going to put my car up on the lift. He puts it up. My leg scrapes because I almost fell, and I slid down. And now I have this deep cut on my leg, and it's bleeding. And the cops came. Everything was going really bad, and I just kept trying to tell them that my leg is messed up, and the guy was like swearing that he didn't lift my car up while I was in it, and my girlfriend, they all were taking pictures anyway. So I don't know what to do.
Well, it sounds like you have evidence that he lied and that he was lifting the vehicle. Lifting the vehicle while you're hanging or dangling out of it is probably pretty serious. I would say negligence at the least, maybe an intentional act. But let's assume for a minute he didn't see you dangling out of there, and he didn't make sure that everything was safe and secure for him to do what he needed to do with your vehicle. That would be a case of negligence, and he'd have to be responsible for the damages that flowed from that negligence, or his insurance would, more likely. And so if you have evidence. Now, on the other hand, you're going to have some comparative negligence. In other words, when somebody's in the process of lifting a car or towing a car and you dash over hoping to be able to dive into your car and drive off before he gets a chance to tow it, there's going to be some comparative negligence. They're going to say, hey, you should have thought about possibly the consequences of that act and not done that. I think, though, that his negligence is going to supersede your comparative negligence. And I think that, you probably would be entitled to some damages for his actions because he's the professional. He's got the last clear chance to really put the stop on this activity and not to engage in it.
Right. and it's crazy because he looked at me. He didn't even get in his truck. He was still doing the wheels. And he said, I'm still towing it. He runs, he wasn't even in the car. He was still where I was standing.
Right.
He was where I was at.
Anyway, you can, follow up with your attorney and pursue your claim. But you'll need his identity as well. I'm sure you have that. And provide that to your attorney, and you should be on your way to getting compensation for that nasty leg injury. Thanks, Tanisha, for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you as well.
All right. 215-227-2727. That's right. That's our number now. 215-227-2727 gets into the studio.
Ease. Very easy.
Yeah.
You don't have to remember any other number, right?
Right. It's just the My Philly Lawyer number for all of Philadelphia, for when we're on Court Radio or when we're at the office, when we're in court. You just dial that number and you'll always get us.
Zippity doo-dah.
Bam. Righty. David, our hot button topic today.
Yes, our hot button topic is one that everybody is talking about always over the past several years. And that is distracted driving, particularly with we're going to focus on GPS units, and I guess we'll discuss cell phones too, because that's really what we're this whole topic is.
So let's get our guest on the line here. We have Albert Evans. Albert?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, welcome to Court Radio.
It's good to be here.
Albert is the attorney for Rockwell versus Knott and Prime Inc. It's a case involving distracted driving, and he's had a precedent-setting decision by a judge. In what county were you in, Al, when the case took place?
We were in Lackawanna County, which is a Scranton, Pennsylvania area.
Wow, that's okay. It's not too far from Philadelphia. And the judge in the case had made a decision which really expanded the law a little bit. Tell us about it.
Well, what happened was, and I'll give you a little background factually, my client was on a motorcycle driving with a right-of-way, clear sunny day in an August of 2011, and the driving on a straightaway when a person, Mr. Knott, in a van was looking at a handheld GPS that was positioned in a cup holder below the dash, looking at it and moving his vehicle, making a left-hand turn, and he ran right into my client while he was driving through the intersection with the right-of-way and causing him to sustain some severe injuries.
So that's interesting.
We brought a claim for not only negligence but punitive damages, saying that it is completely reckless to be using a handheld device while you're looking away from where you're supposed to be looking and your vehicle is moving. And Judge Nealon agreed that that type of conduct does rise to the level of recklessness, which would warrant punitive damages.
Okay, so the expansion or the issue in your case that was unique is that not only did you bring a claim for your client's compensatory damages, this pain, his suffering, and his medical expenses and whatnot, but you also brought a separate claim for punitive damages to punish the wrongdoer, to punish the negligent party for their extreme acts of negligence.
That is exactly right.
Okay, now I just want our listeners to know that there's, and this happens, and you know, we bring claims sometimes for punitive damages when the facts warrant it, but understand that insurance typically will only pay for the compensatory portion of the award. They will not pay for the punitive portion. That has to come from the tortfeasor's or wrongdoer's own pocket. Now, in your case, I note that the wrongdoer is a business.
Exactly, and that's what made this the money or fine the money available through the business was a trucking company called Prime Incorporated. The person who caused the accident was driving a commercial van or a van that was being operated in the course of his employment, which was for a major trucking company.
Hmm. Okay, now, and he wasn't actually physically holding the GPS unit when the accident occurred. He was just looking at it, correct?
Yes, it was in a cup holder that was below the dashboard and your sight line. So he had to look away from the road and was still moving his vehicle, had started to make his left-hand turn and was moving in the direction of my client, and actually was only alerted to the fact that my client was in the intersection by a passenger who was in the vehicle with him who yelled, "Wait, wait, wait." And at that point in time, he tried at that point in time to stop, but he was already had already hit my client.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you how you were able to prove that the tortfeasor was actually doing that, and I assume it was from the witness in the car and maybe his admission?
The best witness I had was the police officer at the scene who at the scene he admitted to the police officer that that's why he did not see my client, that his eyes were looked away from the roadway while he was moving his vehicle.
Right. Now,
however,
the
and also the witness, the passenger in the vehicle. However, he did deny that in his deposition before trial and claimed that he was looking ahead and just didn't see my client.
Now, the distinction, because David and I were wondering, will this really expand the law and allow punitive damages based on internal vehicular GPS units or radios where you're
on the dash,
where you're looking at the GPS as you're driving. You know, almost everybody nowadays, every new car has a GPS built in. And so the question is, will that apply as well? And it sounds to me like it may not, because you're talking about diverting your eyes from the windshield, from the line of sight.
Exactly. We analogize this to the texting law. You know, in Pennsylvania, there is a law that prohibits people from texting while driving. There are laws in other states that prohibit the use of handheld cell phones, and we analogized it to that type of distracted driver. And I'm sure, as you're aware, there's in Pennsylvania there were more than 14,000 distracted driver cases in last year. There were more than, I think, 50 fatalities involving distracted drivers using handheld devices and looking at them while the vehicle is moving. And that's the biggest issue that was applicable in our case.
You see, I think the key issue here isn't so much while we're focusing on GPS and texting and all that. It's really just distracted driving, because I can see a scenario that you can file, and I would file for punitive damages and argue it if someone admitted, let's say, or there's evidence to show that they were drinking a soda and they dropped it, the can in the car. And while they're driving, they're reaching down to pick up the can because it's on the floor rather than watching where they're driving. It's almost, it is the same exact theory. I think this could be expanded to everything. You know, it's just distracted driving, really.
Tell us, Al, what was the outcome of your case? Or is it done yet?
We settled after that decision. We settled at a pretrial conference and for an undisclosed amount, but my client was satisfied and it worked out.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. So, you know, it's a funny thing, punitive damages. Sometimes it's the carrot and the stick. You really plead them, but you never get them, because they end up resolving it promptly for fear of the punitive outcome.
That's exactly right. It's a way to try to protect your client and give him the best possible outcome.
Good job, Al, and thanks for joining Court Radio. Albert Evans from Lackawanna County.
Actually, I'm from Schuylkill County.
He's in
from Lackawanna, but thank you very much, and it's a very informative show.
Thanks, Al. Take care, sir.
All right.
All right. There you go. So,
another good one.
Yeah. You know, I had a case when I was a slightly younger attorney.
You had a case?
I had a case.
All right. Good for you.
A young man fell into a swimming pool, and I sued the apartment complex where he was staying at the time, because there was a giant hole in the fence of the swimming pool, which allowed him to gain access to the pool while it was not protected by a lifeguard. He fell into the pool and nearly drowned and became severely brain damaged as a result of this fall. So I sued the apartment complex. I also sued the three owners of the apartment complex, Manny, Moe, and Jack. It was the Corman brothers. Okay, it's not really, their names aren't Manny, Moe, and Jack, but I forget their first names. Sam and Bertram and somebody else, but it was the three Corman brothers. I sued them individually and punitively because this hole in the fence had been there for 2 years, and like a 300-pound Philadelphia detective was able to get his body through the hole and into the pool area. So I thought it was beyond negligence. Well, they did the same thing. They filed for a motion to quash the punitive aspect of that claim. They lost that motion.
And then it settled.
The case settled like days later.
But I will note that while that is usually what happens, or I wouldn't say usually, but that is what happens a lot when punitive damages are allowed in a case. Really, the function of punitive damages historically, I think, has been to, well, obviously punitive damages are punishing, but really what they've done, because there's a, not to sway from our topics, but this is a big movement by corporations and insurance companies to abolish punitive damages. Why? Because that's where juries really give huge amounts of awards when they're outraged at the crazy, reckless conduct of corporations in hurting people. So punitive damages have the effect of punishing, yes, but also discouraging these corporations from doing it because they say, geez, if juries are going to be allowed to give these huge awards of punitive damages, maybe we should spend the extra 20 cents on each of our products to not like burn somebody. So I think historically that's what it's done, and it's been a positive thing. So don't allow your legislators to get rid of punitive damages, people.
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court's doing a good job of tapping into it, but and reducing its effectiveness. But let's talk to some callers. We got Donald from Vineland, New Jersey. Donald, good morning, and welcome to Court Radio. Donald. Donald.
Punitive damages claim against Donald for...
The Donald. He's gone.
The Donald, yeah. It was Trump.
Let's talk to Anonymous from East Oak Lane. Anonymous.
This is always fun.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Anonymous. Welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you. My father died a couple weeks ago. I'm his only daughter, and I'm the executor of his estate. And my father left a mess back here, and I had to pay his, reinstatement, because his house was going into foreclosure.
Right.
So they told me I had to pay that money, so I had to hurry up, send that money off to Aquin Loans. And then they told me that I have to wait to 2035 to take over his loan, or I could do modification, or I could do refinance. I never owned any property, so I'm kind of nervous because I don't know what to do, Mr. Weissman. I'm very nervous here.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you what to do. You're going to give us a call during the week because you at least need to give yourself the benefit of a consultation with an attorney who can review the documents and kind of help you understand what your rights are and what obligations you might have as the head of your dad's estate, the executor of your father's estate. You really have some obligations. You got to pay some taxes. You're going to have to file a tax return. You're going to have to transfer that property. There's things that have to happen. And
but I think he has liens on it, though.
He may. And he may have liens on it, and you may have to satisfy those liens or make some provisions or what have you. But again, really, my best advice for you is to do that in consultation with an attorney who can review the entire picture and tell you what's going to happen so that there's no surprises. I don't want to see you paying for something for, 6 months or a year and then figuring out that it doesn't really have any value and you're going to have to leave and you wasted money. So let's, make a small investment in the front side with a consultation, and then you'll know exactly what's going on.
They told me to just keep making his payment, his mortgage payment, because I'm living here now.
Right.
And they told me to just keep making the payments.
Well, that may end up being the case. Are you the sole beneficiary?
Yes, I'm his only daughter.
Okay. All right. So anyway, here's what you're going to do. Give Saul, one of the fellows at my office, a lot of what he does is, he does the estate planning and the estate work for our clients. And so I want you to call tomorrow morning for Saul, S-A-U-L, at the number you just called. It's our number, 215-227-2727. And you'll make an appointment. Come on down and bring your paperwork, and he'll take a look at it.
Okay. Thank you so much. I feel much better now because I sure didn't know what to do, and I don't know a real estate lawyer.
There you go. All right. All problems are solved on Sunday mornings.
S-A-U-L.
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 Yep.
I will be there.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
All right. There she goes.
There she goes, yes.
That was a Kyle-ism. Who are we going to talk to? Let's talk to Joe from West Philly. Hey, Joe from West Philly. Welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and you're welcome.
I have a problem. Well, I don't know whether it's a problem or not, but there's a settlement next week on a piece of property, and the property that's being settled says that my property is encroached upon their property. What they want to do is deed the property to me, and I'm wondering if I have any problems once they deed it to me.
Well, you may have a tax obligation. In other words, if all of a sudden your property grew by, you know, the taxable portion, like if you're paying for, you know, most of your property, but that little extra bit that's on the other side, you're not paying for, but now you're going to get it and you are paying for it, possibly your taxes are going to go up because your property value went up.
Plus, it should be deeded to you if it's done through the settlement and everything, free and clear of any liens or any type of money that's owed on that property.
Is there an attorney who's representing the property holder on the first property going to settlement next week?
Yes, there is.
Okay. And do you have an attorney?
No, I do not. And they had told me that about the settlement, but I wasn't invited to the settlement to, I guess, to sign that deed.
Sure, yeah, you might be, and but then the question is, like you're going to a gunfight with a knife. You don't have your own representation, and I'm not suggesting anything funny is going to go on, but you know that attorney's job is to represent his client. And if there is a conflict, if there is an issue, you should have your own counsel. And so I would suggest to you that you want to at least have somebody look the paperwork over before you go signing anything.
Right. Well, this all happened so fast because I was just told about it on Thursday. Right.
Yeah, we're getting some feedback here, something. Yeah, we don't know.
Direct line, yeah. Some alien interference here.
Yeah, it's a... Area 51 and a half. It's close to West Philly.
Look, the bottom line is this. Anytime you're, it sounds great. They're giving you some property. It's going to increase your property. It's going to give you access.
How much extra property are you getting, Joe?
It's 5 foot long and 354 square feet.
Okay.
Is it needed to access the other property?
No, it is not. It's just on the side of the it's on the east side of the property. They say they don't need it anymore.
Right. Okay.
So they're going to just deed it to me. It, back in the '60s, it was they said my grandfather encroached on it when he built the building.
See, here's what I think you're talking about. I think it is your property, but they have an easement. They have because if they're giving it, they're getting rid of the easement, then it becomes your property anyway.
Well, that may be, but he
or
said
or maybe
that,
the other if it's the other property and they're actually deeding it to you, not only will they need your signature, but you have to sign all sorts. You're going to become the owner. The Philadelphia tax department's going to want to know you're the owner and all that stuff.
The only bad thing I could see, Joe, is if there was like a toxic dump on that 5 foot section, then you're buying yourself a lot of trouble. But ordinarily,
he's not buying it.
If they're just cleaning up the property lines, and if you know if your grandpa stole their property 30 or 40 years ago, and you've all been utilizing it and acting like it's your own property for the last 40 years, it's probably yours anyway by operation of law, and they're just cleaning up the deed to match or conform to what reality is. Go ahead, Joe.
I can't get myself in any trouble by signing this deed. But my family has said it was them that stole property from him.
See, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. It's the Hatfield and the McCoys, right. West Philly style.
Well, look, the one thing I have to disagree with, Joe, there was a statement you made that I think is a cautionary one that everyone should not agree with, which is, I don't think I can get in any trouble signing. You can always get in trouble signing anything because you got to know what you're signing and you got to read it and make sure it's accurate. So That's why you need someone to at least be able to explain to you what it is you're signing and that you're actually getting what they're telling you and you're not, you know, creating an
issue.
Yeah,
what if the day after you sign this, your property is now theirs? I said, what happens if the day after you sign this document, your property is now theirs?
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, no kidding. You should be.
So it's an important decision. And what do you do? An important decision? You call 215-227-2727 during the week and ask for Saul, because not only does he do estates, but he really does a lot of the property law and, you know, works with title companies and stuff of that nature. Okay. And you really want to make sure you spend a little, but, you know, you at least you know you're protected. It's peace of mind.
Right.
All right, Joe, thanks for giving us a call and have a great Sunday.
You too.
All right. Okay. All right, David, we're going to jump off for a quick break. Those holding on the line, stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 minutes after these kind sponsors' announcements.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured in an automobile accident, you know what matters. Being able to afford medical care, providing for your family while you're out of work, knowing your rights and getting just compensation. These things matter. That's why your attorney matters. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been injured in an auto or truck-related accident, My Philly Lawyer will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Like that, don't you, David?
The explosion isn't loud enough, though.
I like it. I think
everything else is loud. The explosion needs to be explosive. Oh, there you go. Nice.
Okay. We do. All right.
Callers.
We have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller
from the PennDOT. Brad Rudolph. Yo, Brad. Welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you, Dean. Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for calling in. David and I have been discussing all morning the use of handheld GPS devices recently banned in the state of California. And, you know, what happens in California slowly but surely rolls across the country. But how are things in Pennsylvania? Are the use of handheld devices like GPS units on the rise?
Well, you know, we see more and more younger drivers using handheld devices, GPSs as well. They are on the rise. Unfortunately, there is no law on the books in Pennsylvania prohibiting them. So they are allowed to be used, but we ask people to keep their eyes on the road and hands on the wheel.
So while texting and driving has become banned in the Commonwealth, GPS devices are still able to be used. It's kind of like a catch-22, because the whole reason we don't want people texting, obviously, is because we want their eyes on the road, but we haven't figured out that that also applies to GPS devices, huh?
Well, you know, GPS devices can be helpful if they're mounted in the right, you know, in the right position where your eyes are not, you know, being taken off the road, and you know, it's in a safe area. It can be, you know, it could be a helpful reminder. You can put the voice guidance on. You can just listen to the GPS. So there are some good uses for it, but you know, it does help you get where you're going.
Yeah, right. I think the cell phone is the thing here, because these cell phones now do everything. But
they do.
Yeah, texting though, it seems to me to be the biggest predator, because you're also not only distracted, but you're actively like punching in things, and you have to look at it to make sure you're typing it correctly and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you see that all the time. And yeah. I was on my way to work Friday, I think, and there was this guy next to me, you know, in a suit. He was on his way to the office, and he was texting away, which, you know, is not unusual. But the real shame of it is that his 11-year-old, 12-year-old daughter, you know, was sitting in the seat next to him,
right,
watching him do that.
Right.
And so that's what she's learning from daddy is, you know, it's okay to text and drive. And when she turns 16 in 4 years, I guess that's, you know, going to be a part of her lexicon of appropriate driving behaviors. Are we seeing a rise in, can you determine how many accidents are caused when handheld GPS units are being utilized, Brad?
Well, I can tell you there are about nearly 15,000 crashes last year attributed to distracted driving. GPSs, we don't have specific numbers on that, but there were 57 deaths in those crashes with, distracted driving was the main cause of the crash. I mean, if you are distracted and you are using a handheld device, you are about 23 more times likely to get into a crash. If that number means that, you know,
does that statistic that you gave when you say distracted driving, does that include, like I gave an example earlier in the show, you know, someone drops a piece of food that they're eating and they're reaching down to try and get it. Okay. It involves
eating,
that kind of,
grooming, you know, attending to children or pets, or interacting with other passengers in the vehicle, adjusting the GPS, the radio. That's all distracted driving.
Because when I looked into this a little bit a little while ago, and I was alarmed at how much a problem eating in the car is. Actually, eating is a big distraction that people don't realize.
Anytime you're taking your eyes off the road, I mean, eating is one of those things. You're reaching for whatever.
And, yeah.
And your eyes are off the road, and you're still driving away. I mean, if you are distracted, I mean, you take your eyes off the road for about 4 or 5 seconds, you've just traveled an entire length of a football field without looking.
Yeah,
so
that's,
look at all the things that could happen in that amount of time.
Yeah, that's an amazing way to look at it.
I know, scary.
I think that this has been going on time immemorial, not to minimize it, but I mean, you know, I have the back in like the 50s and 60s, you had like the dad going to work, reading a newspaper and using an electric shaver. I mean,
right.
You know, that was like part of the advertising at that time.
While they're driving, yeah.
While they're driving.
That's why you had that portable shaver. You could do it in the car.
Right. Yeah, so, but it is, cars move much quicker, much faster. There's so many more cars on the road nowadays.
More cars, more volume, yep.
And so the consequences are catastrophic, or can be catastrophic, and you can't undo it once it's been done. So, folks, listen to Brad and follow some common sense when driving and utilizing handheld devices.
Real quick, Brad, are there any... is there any things that PennDOT is doing to, you know, alert drivers to this type of behavior and, you know, how to act accordingly?
Absolutely. Besides, you know, reaching out to communities and holding events, we are in schools, you know, monthly, hundreds of schools across the state, because, you know, changing driving behavior is where it's at.
Right.
And like you said about the child looking at his father who's texting, we're trying to curb that kind of behavior. And it starts with, you know, our young drivers, our most inexperienced drivers.
Yeah, half of you know, the things I do in life are because of my kids. I mean, I stopped smoking because of them. I try not to text and drive because of them. You know, I might engage in bad behavior, but I really don't want to teach that to them. And so if that's the reason why people modify their behavior, so be it.
So be it.
All right, Brad Rudolph from PennDOT, we thank you for joining Court Radio this morning, and have a great Sunday, sir.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks, guys. Have a great morning.
Thanks.
All right. We got some callers, David. Let's jump on the line here and talk to Mike from Southwest, who has a Med Mal question. Good morning, Mike, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, Dean. Just a comment before my question. I wanted to talk to you, right, but I pulled over, and I'm stopped. I'm talking to you. I'm on my cell phone. I pulled over to talk.
There you go.
One of the things that people should do, if nothing is never that important, that you can, you know, a life that you have to sit back here and do this, pull over and park your car and talk or text. You know,
there you go.
You're right.
Yeah, but my question, but my question is, you know, I'm thinking about, like, to know whether or not I should bring a lawsuit against a major hospital for misdiagnosis of my medical condition. Back in November 12th of last year, I went to the VA hospital and an emergency room. I was and they diagnosed me with gastrointestinal virus, and they released me that next morning, even though I told them that the pain was still there and I wasn't feeling any better. A couple of days later, that Friday, I ended up going back to the emergency room with a ruptured appendix. Appendicitis. You know, I ended up in the hospital, induced coma for several days, and then they transferred me to HUP to sit back and continue, because I actually passed away for 5 minutes on the operating table. But from what I understand, I had a blockage in my appendix that could have been detected with the proper CAT scan beforehand, but they never did any of those tests. It just released me. So I'm just wondering whether or not I can sit back here and bring a possible lawsuit against the hospital, because now I had to have 3 operations, a lap hernia operation, a reversal of my ileostomy, because you had to give me that as well. And I'm still recuperating since November of last year. And I'll be out until at least February of next year.
When you say you're going to be out until February of next year, out of what?
Out of work. You know, I couldn't work. I mean, I was in a hospital, in induced coma from November 16th to December 4th over at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital.
Okay.
And they had me in the hospital, and then they brought me out of the coma, transferred me back to the VA hospital, where I had to sit back here and recuperate in the ICU. And then they transferred me to the rehab nursing home until January 18th. Then they sent me home, and I've been recuperating that time.
Ever since. Okay. So here's an answer to your question. The answer is you may have a medical malpractice claim. People just don't understand is that you need to have 2 things in order to have a medical malpractice claim. And it's not easy for ordinary non-medical people to understand what is or isn't a valid claim. When you're driving your car and somebody rear-ends you, you all know right away, I've got a case. If I've been injured in that accident, I understand the standard of care. I know that the other driver has an obligation to avoid striking me in the rear, and if they don't, then they're negligent, and if I've been sustained damages, then I'm entitled to compensation. That's an easy idea for people to grasp. On the medical malpractice side, knowing what the standard of care is and whether a doctor breaches that standard of care is not something that ordinary people understand. And then they don't understand the second part, which is they need to have damages which flow from that negligence, and not just some damages. You can have a sprain and a strain from an auto accident. You can be, you know, in pain for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months and have something that has some small value, and you'll find an attorney who's willing to pursue that claim for you. It might only be worth $5,000 or $10,000, but they'll pursue it and they'll resolve it, and it's fairly inexpensive. Again, on the medical malpractice side, no attorney worth their salt is going to pursue a claim that doesn't have substantial value. into the hundreds, maybe into the millions, because the cost in litigating that case is so expensive. So there's two parts to this question. One, did the doctors mess up? And two, whatever they did, were the damages so substantial that it's worth pursuing and investigating further? Part one is a medical determination. So we'll look at the records in conjunction with expert doctors to see if the doctors knew or should have known from your symptoms. It's not whether they could have known that you had some condition. It's whether they should have known. And what I mean by that is, yeah, you said it's possible that they could have known I suffered from a more serious condition had they done a CAT scan. The question is whether the medical profession believes, based on the symptoms you presented that day, whether a CAT scan was warranted, because there's a lot of tests they could have done for you. They could have scanned your entire body. The question is whether, based upon your complaints, history, and everything else that they were able to see, whether a CAT scan was an appropriate and required diagnostic study based on your set of circumstances that day. And we need to look at the medical records to determine that. Let's assume
Here's the question, though. Here's the thing is,
yeah.
I told them they kept touching my stomach, and like I was saying, it still hurt. It's tender, and it hurts there. And, you know, like my sister, who happens to be a nurse, said, well, you had a blockage in your appendix, and they should have found that out by doing an appropriate test.
Here's another issue. Here's another related issue that I think Dean will agree with. There's also an issue of, what if they had found that? What would have been the course of treatment you could have gotten then?
It would have been a regular operation.
Wait a minute.
Took me in as a regular operation and undid the blockage, as opposed to me coming back in that Friday, passing out in the ER, and rushing up to emergency surgery, whereas I died on the table for 5 minutes, and they had to bring me back.
That sounds reasonable. It sounds to me like he did sustain some, his condition exacerbated to the point where he had some more damages.
Yeah, yeah. If you were going to need surgery anyway, that deflates the value of what we're talking about, because all the things involved with surgery come into play. There are risks of surgery. If you had that regular surgery, you could have coded and they would have needed to revive you. So there's a lot of issues that come into play that muddy the value of the case and make it much more reasonable for them to fight it to the death, so to speak, which they do anyway, which raises the cost of the litigation and the time and all that, which is what Dean is talking about.
Yeah, you're only going to be compensated, as David says, for those damages which are directly attributable to the delay, not to the original condition. So you don't get compensation for the original surgery, because you would have needed that 4 days earlier. But you do get compensation for any damages which we could prove flowed from the delay and your worsening condition. But that's all premised upon the idea that, you know, the medical records would demonstrate. Because if you have a really, really bad stomach virus and they press on your stomach, you're going to hurt anyway. That could be pain on stomach palpation could be the symptom for many, many different conditions, not just for appendicitis.
But look, here's the moral. The moral of the story is, as you can hear, because we're saying it could be this, could be that. Your question was, do you have a case? The answer is, you may, which means you should definitely consult with a lawyer, get the medical records, review them, and experts will determine whether there was something that was done wrong that could have been done differently and what the level of your damage is. And then you can decide whether to bring an action or not.
Have you done that yet?
Well, that's what I'm thinking
right
about.
That's why you're thinking.
I contacted a lawyer, and they were getting any medical records from both hospitals, University of Pennsylvania plus the VA hospital.
There you go.
To sit back and have their medical team to review it to see whether or not they should bring suit.
That's exactly right.
I can't sit down for any length of time No longer 5 minutes. I got to get up because of my back now, because of operation and, you know, the fact that I was out for so long. I can't stand for so long. I can't sit for so long.
Yeah, well,
so
you're getting now. You're talking all about the potential damages. And again, before you get to the potential damages, let's look to see if there is actually a bona fide cause of action, and that they absolutely breached the standard of care. Like, they're supposed to give everybody who has your symptoms a CAT scan, but they just messed up and didn't give you one and let you go accidentally. And therefore, you have the first part, which is the negligence. Before you get to your damages, you need to prove negligence. And so that's what the medical records are going to be used for. Good luck with that, and thanks for calling Court Radio. Thanks for pulling over and letting us know what's going on in your life.
Okay, Dean. Thank you very much, then.
All right, now, goodbye. All right, so
He's doing the right thing. He's having it reviewed. He's got last November, so there's 2 years from that date. So he's got time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going well.
The only question is, why didn't he call court? Why didn't he call?
I was going to say that.
My Philly lawyer.
I don't know.
He's
calling you. He wants to hear your.
Everybody calls me for a second opinion.
right.
Not everybody calls me for the first look-see, but a lot of people do, but not yet everybody. So until every single solitary soul in Philadelphia is calling 215-227-2727 for their cases, then I'm going to have to keep on reminding you to do that. That's all. It just gives me a job. You know, it's my job to remind you. All right. Well, we're going to take a couple more calls right after we have a quick break before the end of the show, and then we're going to take a couple calls. So 1 second. Come back in 2 minutes after these sponsored announcements.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If your child suffered a birth injury, you know what matters. Getting proper medical care, counseling and assistance, knowing your rights, and getting just compensation to provide for your child's future matters. That's why your attorney matters. My Philly Lawyer is ready to fight relentlessly for you and your child. Call 215-227-2727. Choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting compensation you deserve. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Hey. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of the hour, but we have one caller we'll get to. Let's talk to Tony from Northeast Philly. Hey, Tony, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, how you doing?
We're well, thanks. What's your quick question?
I just want to let you know that I will be contacting you guys if you can help me.
Go for it.
I have a family court question concerning child support.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to know, in Pennsylvania, what is the cutoff age for child support? Is it 18?
It is. It is 18. But If you have a if you have an order in place to pay support, it doesn't terminate automatically. So even if the kid's beyond 18, you still have to take the steps necessary to terminate the order and to file a petition with the court. And it's a simple petition, but you still have to tell the court that the child is now beyond the age of 18. They don't One area of law that my Philly lawyer does not take cases on is family law. But we'll be happy to help you get situated with another attorney, and we'll refer you to one of our friends who does family law. So by all means, give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727.
And that doesn't matter if they're still in school or not.
Nope.
Terminated after 18.
That's correct. Okay. Unless you have an agreement contrary to that. If you had an agreement with your ex, with the mom of the child, that you would pay for the child support beyond 18 if you went to college, then you might. But the law doesn't require it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Tony. Take care, buddy.
All right.
All right.
You guys have a great day.
You do the same. All right, David. That wraps up another Sunday morning with you. And
yes.
Our first Sunday with 215-227-2727. Folks, if you have a legal question, we have an answer. Just give us a call at 215-227-2727 all week long.
If you're on the line, you could, unfortunately, we can't get to you. You can go on the internet. You can go on Twitter. You could go on Facebook. And post your question, and Dean will get to you.
There you go.
Or me.
And now we're going to pass the baton to my friend. There he is, Vincent.
Always up and ready and
Vincent
chipper.
Vincent Hughes.
And ready to go, man. He's
and
like,
Philly Speaks. So this is your...
and he's,
this
in, a suit.
I got to go to church.
Is this your first week as the host of Philly Speaks?
This is week one.
Week one.
Be gentle,
Being the dream.
You're looking very dapper today. He's got a little pocket square. He's trying to work the microphone, and he needs to sit. There you go.
I'm going to sit.
See, not everybody can stand and do the show. You have to have experience.
You have to have... E. Stephen Collins sitting right next to you.
There you go. All right.
There you go.
Look at that.
Love that.
He's got a picture of my friend E. with
Everyone's
the biggest
friend.
Afro. The Afro has its own zip code, I think. It's that big.
Confident? That's like the exact opposite of your hairdo you got going.
Yes, there was time. There was a time many, many years ago when I had a hairstyle like that.
Right.
I don't believe it.
It's absolutely true.
You'd have to show pictures.
Dean the Dream, did we solve any legal problems this morning?
We were talking, actually, Vince, about distracted driving.
Wanted to hit your point on that.
It's a big issue. Big issue.
And using GPS handheld devices. California has recently outlawed the use of handheld GPS devices, which are very distracting. Take your eyes off of the roadway in order to look at left turn, right turn. And what happens in California usually over time finds its way to Pennsylvania here. We're going to go to a break, I guess, because Kyle's got his hands flipping in
Kyle's
the air.
Doing the hand flipping, go to the break move.
He's
all right.
Freaking out.
Vince,
no, he's not.
It's
Dean,
always good to see you, man.
It's a pleasure to see you, man.
Yeah, I'm really happy you're joining our team here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Anything I can do to keep the spirit of E. Stephen Collins going, that's what I'm going to be about, man.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right.